good cop, bad cop. Which one is which between the two of us?
I'm good cop, you're bad cop.
You said that too confidently.
I'm good cop, you're bad cop. Gotcha, bitch. It's just the law of nature. It's as simple as that.
Somebody said that all podcast duos are the same dynamic. There's one who does the laughing, there's the other one that just keeps interrupting. And I wonder which one of us is which.
Yeah, I think I'm the one who keeps interrupting anyway myself.
I think you are, to be honest. I can't even get a word in. Do you ever just stop?
I just keep coming up.
Would you stop? Would you let me finish?
The best bits. I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
You are stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello, and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where we pick within cells interlinked.
Within cells interlinked.
Our favorite scenes.
Blood, black, nothingness.
Began to spin.
Within cells interlinked.
And I am joined once again by my co-host, a writer of three films, plus a Christmas special, and a Star Wars.
Within cells interlinked.
Will Collins. Will, have you been picking your feet in Poughkeepsie?
Okay. So that was the variant, picking your feet in Poughkeepsie, is the
That's
French
Taxi
connection.
Driver, according to the internet.
That's French
Because
connection.
I just looked up what I thought that might mean, picking your feet in Poughkeepsie, because I was always led to believe that that was like...
I know what that means.
It doesn't mean anything. It's just meant to be a bit of, you know, random jargon that he says to confuse them.
No.
Good cop, bad cop. We're talking about French Connection, obviously. But if you go online and you Google, what does picking your feet in Poughkeepsie mean?
Yeah.
AI comes back with, it's a line from Taxi Driver.
That's completely wrong film. Picking your feet in Poughkeepsie.
AI is the future, though.
Comes from the film is obviously based on the real cop. Was he Popeye Doyle? Was he the real guy?
Yeah, that was the real guy.
He was also heavily involved in the development of the film. And that he was referring to a real case of a rapist who had raped some girl in Poughkeepsie. And after he had either raped and murdered a girl, he sat by the side of the bed and he picked the skin off his feet.
Let me talk to him!
You got a friend
just
here,
for a
buddy!
Minute.
You got a friend!
You gonna tell us who your man is?
When's the last time you picked your feet, Willie?
Who's your connection, Willie? What's his name?
What?
Answer him! No, man!
Hey, no.
Huh? What's he talking about?
I got a man in Poughkeepsie who wants to talk to you. You ever been to Poughkeepsie? Huh? Have you ever been to Poughkeepsie?
Hey, man, come on, give me a break. Hey, what
on,
you talking
on,
about?
Let me hear you say it. Come on. Have you ever been to Poughkeepsie? You've been to Poughkeepsie, haven't you?
I want to hear it! Come on!
Yes, I've been.
You've been there, right?
Yeah.
You sat on the edge of the bed, didn't you? You took off your shoes, put your finger between your toes, and picked your feet, didn't you? Now say it!
Yes!
All right.
I thought it was just a bit of random jargon that you throw in to just confuse them. Just like what I just did there at the beginning with the Blade Runner 2049, which is trying to get an emotional reaction out of Ryan Gosling. It's an inversion of the Voight-Kampff test that they do in the original Blade Runner.
Recite your baseline.
In blood black nothingness began to spin. A system of cells interlinked within cells interlinked within cells interlinked within one stem.
Fuck off, skin job.
And dreadfully distinct against the dark, a tall white fountain plate.
Cells.
Cells.
Have you ever been in an institution? Cells.
Cells.
Do they keep you in a cell? Cells.
Cells.
When you're not performing your duties, do they keep you in a little box? Cells.
Cells.
Interlinked.
Interlinked.
What's it like to hold the hand of someone you love? Interlinked.
Interlinked.
Do they teach you how to feel finger to finger? Interlinked.
Interlinked.
Do you long for having your heart interlinked? Interlinked.
Interlinked.
Do you dream about being interlinked?
Interlinked.
What's it like to hold your child in your arms? Interlinked.
Interlinked.
Do you feel that there's a part of you that's missing? Interlinked.
Interlinked.
Within cells interlinked.
Within cells interlinked.
Why don't you say that three times? Within cells interlinked.
Within cells interlinked. Within cells interlinked. Within cells interlinked.
So he has a baseline thing, which is that poem. That's a line from it. Cells interlinked.
It was registering with me. And I was going, what the fuck is that film? Yeah, I was like, what's that? Well, what's that? What's that? It, like, you scratched the itch when you gave me the answer.
Very good film. I loved it more on a second watch.
Yeah.
Will, this episode is about interrogations. It was recommended to us by our patrons. They gave us two options. I said to you, which one do you want to do? You're doing the next one, which is a really, really good topic. And I'm kind of gutted that I didn't get it. This one is interrogations. And this one is, surprisingly, quite a weighty scene theme, because this is all about the writing. This is all about power dynamics, negotiations. It's about mind games.
Well, I will say, it really is on the screenwriter, this one. It is one of those writerly topics, because this is where the drama, this is where you have the kind of climax of the drama of these, of a detective type story, and you have cops or individuals trying to extract information from another individual against their will, and there's all sorts of games that can be played, there's all sorts of intimidation that can happen.
Uncrossing your legs, I've done it many a time.
That's how you got me to agree to do this podcast. You did a wide shot.
Damn, Will.
Imagine this.
Have you ever podcast on cocaine, Will?
Do you use drugs, Miss Trammell?
Sometimes.
You ever use drugs with Mr. Boz?
Sure.
What kind of drugs?
Cocaine. Have you ever fucked on cocaine, Nick?
I'll tell you what, though. When I was asking a few of my other writer friends and director friends and producer friends, I was saying, what are your favourite interrogation scenes? I was surprised that so many of them came back with torture scenes. Mm-hmm. I don't want to include that in these scenes, because I think as soon as you start beating the shit out of somebody, it's no longer an interrogation. Then it's a torture scene.
Yeah.
So,
can I kick us off with one pick? And it's if it wasn't for the fact that I picked it in the last topic, which was best Irish film, it would have been
it's
way up there
be
for me.
In the Name of the Father.
I've got to talk about In the Name of the Father, because I just spoke about it last week. But by Christ, the entire kind of crux of that film is the fact that there's a huge interrogation sequence in that film, extracting a false confession from these innocent creators. There's a moment in it that's particularly potent where Gerry Conlon's been interrogated for days and days and end. But it's when McSorley, the Irish actor, comes in and takes out his gun and begins to put the gun in his mouth and begins to put the gun to his head. That's when things go completely crazy, and you can feel it, that psychological breaking down happening with Gerry Conlon in that moment, because he knows that all rules have completely gone out the window. And you feel how that interrogation process did break a man.
What did you say to me? Little bride, you'll have no daddy. I'm going to shoot you, Sabby.
Bomb and maim. I think this is the trouble. You let it all out. Come on.
I don't hate you.
Yes, you do. I can see it in your face. I know you do. Hatred. So why don't you just let it off your chest, huh? What it starts to mess up with your mind,
Give me the fucking stamen, for fuck's sake. Give me the stamen. Right, that's my fucking name, sir. You can write what you like.
I just thought it was expertly done in The Name of the Father. Didn't want to bring it up as my best pick, but I also couldn't not mention it because it's absolutely brilliant.
Have you ever been interrogated?
Only in confession. Why did you do it?
There you're meant to divulge it, though. The priest doesn't ask you questions. What have you been up to? What have you been playing with?
Who have you been? My first confession, we had to do a practice confession and we had nuns. So there was only seven boys in our class. And she took us over for the practice confession. She was an absolute...
Sister Frippin' Heaven Impure Thoughts.
Sister Evangelist was her name. She was going to pretend to be the priest and I was going to be the kid. And I was the first one to go in to do a kind of a test confession. So I remember her opening the door of this tomb, what seemed like a tomb, this black confessional box, a hole with these thick velvet curtains. And she said, get in there now and kneel. And I was, okay. And I went in and I got down on my knees, right? And she says, and I will be the priest and you will confess to me. And I got, so I went in, she closed the door and it was like being in a coffin, right? Door closed. I got down on my knees, right?
And were we raised by weirdos?
Oh, yes.
When you stop and think about it, what you're just saying there, to do that to a child, that's so bizarre.
Yes. I got on my knees, right? And there was a problem because I knew I was supposed to be on my knees and she was going to pull the door. Do you know, there was a kind of a door that would be the priest to slide open. The latch.
But the glory hole.
When I got on my knees, I was so short. My head didn't reach over the elbow ledge. So when she opened the door, a moment later, I was like panicking because she said, if she doesn't see me, she's going to kill me. If I'm just standing here, she's going to kill me. What am I going to do? So she opened the door and all she saw was like a void where my face would be. And all of a sudden, my head appeared from the top of frame, pointing down upside down. What I had done was I climbed up onto the elbow ledge, like sat up on it. And I was like, okay, this is the halfway medium.
You were sitting on the elbow ledge.
I was sitting on the elbow ledge and I kind of leaned over and she slammed the latch closed shut like really violently. And I went, I'm fucking dead. I'm fucking dead. I'm fucking dead. And I heard the door opening up and then she gripped the door and ripped it out open. And I saw all my buddies sitting in the pews like almost shaking for me. And I remember the velvet curtain swinging and she stood there and she looked at me as I was sitting perched on this elbow ledge. And I thought, this is my last moment to be alive on this earth. I loved He-Man. It was great in Star Wars. And she just started laughing at me. She just laughed and laughed. It was like seeing the Wicked Witch of the West kind of laugh at a little pathetic child.
Well, you were saying there about In the Name of the Father. It came up in our Irish scene. I want to bring up one that didn't come up in a prior episode, but it's in the same realm. We did a whole episode on the Muppets, great episode, but there's a really funny scene, an interrogation song in Muppets Most Wanted, and it's such a toe tapper that I want to include it.
Miss Piggy, you could end up locked inside, and now's your chance to save your hide.
Oh, gentlemen, I did not know. It's a crime to steal the show.
Tell us how we are to escape it.
If you want to save your bacon.
I haven't seen your missing art.
We can give you a plea deal.
All you have to do is squeal.
I'm not a thief. I don't know how. All I've ever taken is a bow.
We'll catch the swine that did this job.
Give him the pit pots, creep. Go jump in a lake. That's my suggestion.
Thank you, Piggy. No more questions.
Kevin, you asked me, had I been interrogated? I want to throw the question back to you. Have you ever been interrogated, Queeveen?
Yes, I have. I do remember once feeling hoodwinked by grown-ups and thinking, God, they're very clever. How did they manage to do that? They have done a mind game on the two of us, because it was two of us involved, two perpetrators, and they split us up. But what happened was me and my first cousin, Rory, I was probably 8 and he was 7, or maybe I was 7 and he was 6. Right. I'm about 9-10 months older than Rory. So obviously I'm the one that's meant to have sense. But I was very easily waylaid by Rory because he was much more bullish and confident and he would just make decisions and I would just tag along with Rory. So I was the one that would get fucking lambasted for the things that he would convince me to do and right. I would just go along with it.
Yeah.
Rory had noticed that in the top corner above the cupboard in the kitchen, his parents would put away into a jar money for the ESB. And so they would just slip a 20 or a tenner in there or whatever. I had no idea about this because obviously I didn't live in Rory's house. But Rory told me one day when we were having like cheese on toast, he whispered, he was like, up there, they've got some money. And I was like, all right. And he's like, let's take some of the money tomorrow and go down to Leisureplex. And Leisureplex was an arcade. And was
this on Patrick Street?
It was, no, on McCurtain Street.
Okay.
And every time I'd walk past Leisureplex, I would just get the shivers because I would remember what went down. But me and Rory stole the money from above the cupboard. He took a load of money. And I don't know why I didn't say, like, we shouldn't be doing this or anything. I was like, are you sure we can do this? And he'd be like, yeah. And so I was like, grand, so. So the two of us traipsed all the way into town and into Leisureplex, and we cashed up, I don't know how much money, it must have been about 20 quid, for like 20 pence coins and 50 pence coins, and just played the arcade games all day long, spent all the money, went home. Days went by, and then Rory's dad found out that somebody had dipped into the ESB money. My aunt, my mum, Rory's mum, my godmother, they had a huddle, they got together, they knew that the two of us had done something, but the only way they could get the truth out was to split us up and to take us into a room each and to ask us questions. And I remember being absolutely stunned that Rory had caved in and told them everything, but he hadn't. They told me that he told them everything, and they were lying to me to get me to admit, and then going back to Rory and telling him that I had told them everything that had happened. And so we both basically told on each other. And I remember thinking, fuck, I am out of my depth here. These people are all snakes. You can't trust anybody.
They're mind readers.
What am I?
And it was it's classic police manipulation, interrogation tactics.
And I fell for it.
You fell for it. Pretends that your partner in crime has spilled the beans and go in and says, we know everything. Tell me.
Exactly. I don't remember what happened after that, but I just remember the absolute terror of being interrogated.
That's brilliant.
And yeah.
That's wonderful.
I've got two, since we're talking about kids.
Yeah.
There's two I want to mention about kids, interrogation scenes. I think are very, they popped out immediately to me when I was thinking about this topic. Do you want to take a guess? Do you think you might know what they might be? Okay. Seeing as one I know you so well, do you know me so well?
One of mine does feature a kid, and it's actually going to be my pick. And it's a kid being interrogated by adults. Is that one you're
picking? Okay, yes it is. I'll tell you what the other one is. It's a kid interrogating an adult.
Okay, tell me this.
He's Uncle Buck.
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
Own or rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
You have much more hair on your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid, that's my job.
Oh, a classic scene. They played it in all the trailers. And I remember as a kid, I was trying to memorize what he was saying because he was saying it so fucking fast. He was spitting out the lines. But that's a brilliant little fun scene.
And it's also how that scene, the pace and the rhythm of that scene is edited. It's such a crackerjack kind of like, you know, as you're saying, fast rhythmic way. It's a really fun scene to watch because the retorts that it's like a table ping pong match between the two of them. It's really cool.
It is.
I've got a comedy one because I didn't want to lean in too much into some of the obvious ones that would be at the top of a lot of people's lists. So I searched deep within my soul and said, what were some of the ones that I really enjoyed when I saw them in the cinema? And I've got one from a comedy that was really entertaining, really funny, and very surprising. From a rom-com, which I think there was a lot of photocopies of it, you know, in years to come, and a lot of inferior sequels. But it was the interrogation scene in Meet the Parents.
Oh, I got nipples, Greg. Can you milk me?
Well, it's not that is particular that? Scene. No, it's when he actually has him on the lie detector test.
Oh, come on. We'll have some fun. I'll show you how it works.
Yeah, I shouldn't.
Well, why should you be afraid? You have nothing to hide.
No, I know.
I know you know, so there shouldn't be any problem.
No, there's no problem.
So, try it on.
Okay.
I'll help you. Don't worry. You'll enjoy this. Right.
Looks complicated. Now, these aren't 100% accurate, right? They're...
Well, you'd be surprised how accurate they are. They can tell fairly easily if someone's lying or not. Now I'm going to ask you some questions, and all you have to do is answer yes or no.
Okay.
All right. Let's give it a whirl. Did you fly on an airplane today?
Yes, I did.
No peeking. Did we eat pot roast for dinner tonight?
Yes.
Was it undercooked?
No, it was rare. It was a little rare for my taste. But I...
I'm just kidding. I'm just... Relax, relax. The needles are jumping. Have you ever watched pornographic videos?
No. I mean, well, I don't...
Yes or no?
That's a really good film. I remember seeing that in the cinema, early 2000s, and just enjoying the shit out of it and feel like, yeah, this is what I want. I want to go along to a really good comedy. And Robert De Niro felt like he was present and he was trying again.
Yeah. And it was surprising, the simple fact that he was in a comedy. And I know he's gone on to do like so many comedies and it feels like maybe he's phoning it in. And maybe he is. But in this one, it was like he was playing against
type. He's
nominated
for an Oscar, Will. I don't think he's phoning it in. I think you should take that back.
It wasn't at all. I didn't laugh once in that film. Not once. But what I like about his that scene in Meet the Parents is that he's bringing that intimidation, that history of all those characters. You can't help but separate Robert De Niro from all those past characters like Travis Bickle and, you know, what he's played in Goodfellas and Raging Bull and whatnot.
Good scene, great film. I love that film.
Yeah, really, 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 really fun film.
I had no idea you could milk a cat.
Oh, yeah, you can milk anything with nipples.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
What's good about that one is that's never come up. We've never talked about Meet the Parents ever on the podcast in any capacity. But a lot of my picks, the films have come up in past episodes. And one of them that I feel like mentioning right now, because it's a satirical play on an interrogation scene, is in True Lies. When Arnie's been given all of the sodium pentothal or whatever it's called, the truth serum. And you've got two aspects to it. One, which is where he's drugged up and his wife, Jamie Lee Curtis, is asking him, like, have you ever killed a guy?
What did they give you?
Sodium amytal or some other truth agent.
It makes you tell the truth?
Mm-hmm.
Is it working?
Ask me a question that I normally would lie to.
Are we going to die?
Yep.
And then it culminates in that lovely moment where he says to the guy who's going to be torturing him,
first I'm going to use you as a human shield. Then I'm going to kill this guard over there with a Patterson troker on the table. And then I was thinking about breaking your neck.
And what makes you think you can do all that?
You know my handcuffs? I picked them.
I love that film. Fucking love it. I think it might be my favourite James Cameron film. And so I had to slip in True Lies though.
What's cool about that as a specific moment in a scene, right? From like a screenwriter point of view, you're always looking for that moment in a scene where the energy or the dynamic turns. And
yeah, the shift.
The shift in that scene. And
I
always
love a good shift.
Could you? But it's such, if you can do both and make it funny at the same time, that you have like, it's not just him ripping the cuffs off with his with his incredible strengths that he's just able to pull him apart, but the fact that you bring the truth serum aspect into it, that's clever. That's just good writing. It really
is. There's two things you want in a really good scene. You want the turn within the scene and you want a great capper on the scene, but it needs to be enough of a capper that it doesn't feel like you hit stop on the story. But it leads on to the next thing. It's like it springs you into the next scene, but it still is got a nice sort of like resolution to it.
That's it. So, it's got an ending. Yeah. Each scene must have its own ending, but naturally wants you to go, okay, tell me what's going to happen next, you know? Absolutely.
Exactly. Just one more thing. Whodunits have a load of them.
Of course.
We did a really great episode with C. Robert Cargill that's all about whodunits, because you get to that moment where a detective is interrogating the prime suspect and they are either dropping some sort of like ruse to have them trip up or they are following a lead, and you find an awful lot of those in detective stories. Knives Out had a really good one with Daniel Craig where he tripped up Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Chris Evans? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one that I was thinking of, the one that immediately came to mind. And I was going to bring it up. That was the one I was like, yeah, the Knives Out one. That's really good.
Yeah. Interrogations, they can be so good that it can take up the entire runtime of a film. I watched one for this that was called Unthinkable that starred Michael Sheen and Samuel L. Jackson. And it was good, but it was, again, it was more of a torture film than anything because Samuel L. Jackson goes straight in there and is like, right, we're going to take your finger off, to Michael Sheen, who has planted 3 nukes around the US and he's not going to tell them where they are. And Samuel L. Jackson goes straight in there and thinks, he says an interesting line, actually. As soon as he cuts off his finger, all the agents like Carrie Ann Moss and stuff storm in and like, stop, you can't do that, you can't do that. Who do you think you are? You're not in charge here. And he goes, no, he is, talking to the guy who's he's interrogating. He's in charge because he's got the information and he's not telling us. So I'm going to change the power dynamic here and I'm going to fuck him up.
Is that like an almost fully real-time film? Like, you know, as in it's...
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah.
I've placed 3 bombs in 3 American cities. And all 3 are nuclear bombs.
I'd never even heard of that film until right now.
It went straight to video. I watched it only because of this topic. But another one, and I will probably get... Maybe I've said this before, so I probably won't, but I might get some shit. I don't like The Usual Suspects, but The Usual Suspects is a film which is entirely about an interrogation.
The whole framing device is the interrogation. My favourite thing about The Usual Suspects is I think I brought it up in the Tom Cruise episode.
Kevin Spacey.
Is the genesis of the idea for The Usual Suspects. Chris McQuarrie, the screenwriter, he was working a temp job in an office and he had gotten word from Bryan Singer that he has to have a script for this title that he gave him a couple of months ago. And he was panicking because all he had was a title. And he was going, what the fuck am I going to do? And he was in the photocopy office and he was just looking around the corkboard that was ahead of him. And he started to pull little names and bits and pieces, desperately clamoring for any inspiration for the story. And even one of the accountants was called Kaiser Sose or something close to that. And he just went, holy shit, what if this was an interrogation? And I'm Kaiser Sose or I'm the person making it up as I'm in the room, pulling information from the wall. I think as a concept, it's a brilliant idea. It's a fucking
brilliant
idea. I don't
like it as a concept. I think it's an entire cheat. And we've talked about this before because now I'm remembering saying to you, that for me, it's the equivalent of it was all a dream.
It was all a dream. But no, I like the fact that it was all a trick and we were in the room and we were duped as well. I kind of like that.
But that's like one of those tricks that you see in like the Sherlock Holmes shows or whatever, where you're not privy to the information that the main character is withholding. Mm. So you can never suss it out. Like it's what I thought was absolutely fantastic and clever about The Sixth Sense was that all the information was presented to you. And if you were paying attention, you would have been able to deduce that he was dead and he was a ghost and he wasn't interacting with anybody. So that was like a brilliant trick that was pulled on the audience. But something like The Usual Suspects, you're never going to be able to figure that out. So that to me felt like you're just pulling shit out of your ass. Like,
yep, that's what it is.
You could be telling the detective that, and then these ninjas came along and they all sort of like started drawing stars and it was like, these ninjas, and what were they called? You know, Yoki, Yoshi and Toshi. And you should have seen it. It was Bedlam. Like, holy Christ. And then we see that and you're like going, fucking hell, there's ninjas as well. And then you get to the end, it's like, I was only joking. Yeah, no ninjas. Like, I made it all up.
So you got away with it. I think that's it. It's don't, no, I'm not a huge fan of that film at all, but I kind of think it's that, you know, the idea probably doesn't sustain itself beyond that first viewing. But anyway, I still think I like that concept. I like the idea. I like the genesis of the story more than I actually like the film.
If what you say is true, then it won't matter.
But Chris McQuarrie, he's gone on to do the Mission Impossible films now with Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. And the Mission Impossible films, they had a really good one. That's a good segue, isn't it?
Yes, excellent segue.
They had a really good one. And we've talked about this as well before, but I can't remember on what episode. The opening of Mission Impossible 3, when Philip Seymour Hoffman is interrogating
Ethan Hunt.
Yeah. and he has Michelle Moynihan boned and gagged, and he's got a gun to her head, and he's saying, on the count of 10, I'm going to pop a cap in her ass. And Ethan's like, no, don't. I just met her last week.
And, she sound like...
He's like, no, I'm telling you. She's like, anyway, I don't give a shit. You got to tell me, where's the rabbit's foot? He's like, you better give it to me or I'm going to blow her brains out. And she's like, you better tell him for fuck's sake. I'm only just have to get my hair done. And it's a great scene. It's a great scene.
I don't want to have to make my eye go sideways. It's awful bad for Mretta.
That was Kerry Russell in... Oh, was that in...
I can't remember.
What one was that in?
There was one where it, the thing goes off in her skull and she goes... And it's really unnerving the way the eye just kind of goes... You know, cross-eyed.
Yeah.
It's really...
It was like the dog in Anatomy of a Fall. I don't know how it did that.
Was it not an animatronic dog?
No, I love the dog.
I love the interrogation scene in Anatomy of a Dog. Anatomy of a Fall when you interrogate the dog.
Anatomy of a Fall has some really good interrogation scenes.
It actually does. It really fucking does.
It does. And they're in different languages as well.
And
I was like going, fuck, they're talking French. No, they're talking German. No, they're talking English.
And so much of that film is in the court where it's all about extracting that information from the individual characters. And oh yeah, and actually, as we talked about when we reviewed the film or when we discussed the film, the fact that I'm really fucking troubled. It really troubled me seeing how the French court judicial system worked and how it was like an open dialogue between all the parties. Yeah, what do you think of that? It's like, oh no, you know, like everyone's kind of like, it's a free-for-all almost, it feels like, you know, where the defense team can talk and kind of like just shout something into the audience and say, yeah, where were you? And it was mad.
I can remember another time, right? I was interrogated. I don't know whether I can say this on mic.
Okay, well, do you know when we did
our, underwater thing? Half the comments were, you're not talking about any underwater scenes. You're just talking for 20 minutes about like breathers and regulators.
Yeah.
Well, this is the alternative where we just talk about everything at the same time at once.
Okay.
But this is how I pitch. It's very sort of clean and economical and you get straight in there.
Yeah.
You just get your point across and, you know, bing, 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 cash those checks. I can remember another time I was interrogated. Should I say this? I was working at a video store.
Oh, good. Okay,
and
right.
At this video store, there was
another guy. Would it be called
Extravision? Shut up.
Right.
I don't know what the statutes of limitations are on this. You never know. Because we're from Cork, like everything gets back to everybody. So you got to be careful about what you say. Did you just see that podcast the other day of fucking the two actresses? There's one from that comedy show that James Corden was in, the Welsh show, whatever that was called.
That was Gavin and Stacey.
Gavin and Stacey. So Stacey has a podcast with the girl from EastEnders, the one that would say, no, she wouldn't say Ricky.
Oh yeah, she's just doing this now. I know the one you're on about. Yeah, she's been there for like decades. Yeah.
No, she's been gone for ages.
Oh, she got
another thing. Yeah. Do you know another thing? I'm going to jump around again. So keep in mind though, listening to this, I've made about six different jumps.
Yeah.
Do you know that EastEnders doesn't really exist in the real world anymore? That sort of place doesn't really, the show doesn't reflect reality anymore because those houses are now worth about 1.5 million. The market stalls don't exist. The price of a pint in those pubs is probably about £9. So, you know, they're trying to still pass off that it's real working class, salt of the earth people. But look, you want to be very rich to be living in the East End of London, though.
So you're telling me the stuff I see on TV is not real?
They did a podcast,
yes,
and one of them shat on a sitcom, and the actress that wrote and starred in that sitcom did a
Ruth
video
Jones.
Of herself listening to them shit on the show where she was like eating a banana and stuff. So stuff gets back to people. So now to go thread the needle back again.
Yes, back
I
up to
you. I was interrogated working at the video shop,
Blackpool,
and one of the guys came along. This is where you're the one that's always interrupting.
Yes.
One of the guys came along to the shop to fill in. And he was from a different store. You know the way you do that? You'd be sent around and you'd be like,
was
like
he me?
Filling in. No, it wasn't you. I'd remember you if we worked together.
Yes,
the smell
I would
of
too.
You alone.
It's the smell. I can taste your stink.
Tell me about, go on, what happened?
In the shop, two of us were working together. I couldn't tell you his name though if you asked me. But anyway. Somebody left their purse on the counter and left the shop, and we found it. And it was a woman's purse. And it was my store, and he was filling in. So he said, look, somebody's left their purse or whatever. And I said, just put it under there, under where the laminator was. We went on, we continued with our shift, whatever. He went home about 10 o'clock, and I was on the lockup shift, so I was closing at 12. Around 11:15, this woman came in breathless. She was like, was a purse handed in at all? I'm after losing my purse. And I goes, oh yeah, it was, it's here. And she's like, oh my God, thank Christ. And I was like, it's not there. Let me have a look here. It's not here. Let me have a look there. The purse was gone. And I'd already told her that the purse was handed in, and now the purse was gone. And she lost it. And so she got the guards involved. She got the guards involved. And then the district manager got involved. But the district manager's nephew was the guy that I was working with. And there was only me and there was only him working there. And I didn't take the purse. I didn't take it. So I know that if I didn't take it and nobody else was behind the counter, the only likely chance of anyone taking it was your man.
Yeah.
And she had a meeting to ascertain what had happened, interviewing me and him together. And I was like, this is a complete joke here. This
that's
is
not how
nephew.
They do it in the movies. She said,
I cannot ascertain which one of you took it. So you're both going to be disciplined and you're both going to get whatever. I can't remember what the thing was. It was like, you can't do that. What are you talking about? That's your fucking nephew. I'm telling you that I know I didn't take it. I'd swear on a stack of Bibles. So I'm sitting here like,
yeah,
knowing that he probably took it and she's covering for him. And I just thought, well, couldn't believe it. Anyway, there's a brilliant scene in True Romance between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken.
There actually is.
Do you know who I am, Mr. Wally?
I give up. Who are you?
The Antichrist.
A brilliant scene in True Romance. Amazing segue. It's like you invented the segue. Did you know the inventor of the segue died on a segue accident? This is a true story.
You're joking me.
Oh, that's totally true, yeah.
I thought you can't fall off those things.
He died.
I tried pushing people off so many of them and they keep sort of like wobbling and standing back up again.
Yeah.
It's really hard to knock them off.
Yeah. Oh.
Episode 60, Will. We've only gotten better since the first few.
We've only gotten better. We're so on track. The one in True Romance is an incredible scene.
Yeah, massively tense. And I love interrogation scenes where it feels like a predator has caught their prey.
Yeah.
And there's almost a sense of doom that falls over the scene. There's some great ones even in No Country for Old Men where it's like as soon as... What's his face? Bowlcut is like talking to Kelly MacDonald.
And
she's like, you don't have to do this. And he wants to know where he's gone and whatever.
Can I go back to the true romance one? Is what makes that really memorable for me is how Dennis Hopper's character is such a regular Joe, right? Who normally in these situations we often have examples of characters where the wrong man has been pulled in, and once the spotlight is put on him, he's breaking. He's like, he's incredulous. He's like pleading his innocence. But Dennis Hopper is there, obviously defending his kid, but
protecting him.
But he's putting up such a brave act of defiance against Christopher Walken. And the culmination of that scene, ultimately, you know, he's arrogance and defiance in the face of his own absolute, unequivocal, 100% he's going to be killed in this. But it comes in, it disarms Christopher Walken, the interrogator. It disarms him.
There are 17 different things a guy can do when he lies to give himself away. Guy's got 17 pantomimes. Woman's got 20. Guy's got 17. But if you know them, like you know your own face, they'd be lie detectors all to hell. Now, what we got here is a little game of show and tell. You don't want to show me nothing, but you tell me everything. I know you know where they are, so tell me. Before I do some damage, you won't walk away from.
You're Sicilian, huh?
Sicilian.
You know, I read a lot, especially about things, about history. I find that shit fascinating. Here's a fact, I don't know whether you know or not. Well, Sicilians were spawned by Sagan. Now this, I'm quoting history. It's written. It's a fact, it's written.
I know this guy.
Hey.
Yeah.
Tell me, am I lying?
I don't understand why Tarantino feels that that film is bastardly, because I think it's one of his absolute best. It really is a fantastic film.
Yeah,
and that's probably the best scene in that film.
Yeah, it's the one that sticks, absolutely the one that shines above the rest. Two great performers as well. Good performers just relishing in this dialogue and this charged dramatic scenes. Fantastic.
Christopher Walken has another great interrogation scene as well in another Tarantino film, Pulp Fiction, when he starts telling that kid about the watch.
The watch? Like,
you know, I'm going to stuff this watch up your ass. That's the way it goes. I've not seen it in a while.
Is that how you recall it? Yeah, I'm not sure.
You see this watch? It's going right up your hole.
You said at the beginning that you kind of wanted to stay away from the torture stuff, right? But there was one torture film that touched a nerve for me.
Casino Royale.
No, not because I wasn't going to bring up Casino Royale. It's another really obvious torture film that touched a nerve for me. Come on.
Is it safe? Nerve.
Is it safe? Is it safe?
Yeah.
And that scene in Marathon Man.
From Snickers Man.
Where Dustin Hoffman is in, this is an instance where we've got an innocent man who's been pulled into this espionage situation simply because he's related to the guy they actually want. And he has this fucking ex-Gestapo or ex-Nazi interrogator, played by Laurence Olivier, who relishes in extracting information by doing dentistry on his subjects. Mm. And I swear to God, it's the noise, it's the sound, and even the description of Olivier kind of talking about how the pain that you get from a healthy nerve is a thousand times more painful than you would in a decaying nerve. So whatever feeling you have in a rotting tooth is infinitely worse. So that combined with the I swear to God, it just...
The drill.
Oh yeah, it just gets me.
Is it safe?
Can I say something on the record? And I think, you know, while we have this bully pulpit, I just would like to put it out there. I don't think that men should be dentists. I don't think it's the job for men.
Okay.
Because there's nothing more violating, truly violating for me than, and I have switched dentists when I've had a male dentist, than a man's hand in your mouth.
Yeah, quite large. Yeah.
I remember my dentist in Cork, he had big fucking shovels for hands, and, you know, he could only get 3 fingers in, and I just was gagging, like these big fucking sausage fingers.
It's praised like King Charles.
Exactly. And he's in and he's fishing around, and you know, your tongue, you can't control your tongue. Your tongue has a mind of its own. Like, if something goes in your mouth, your tongue is like, I'll have a lick of that. So, you know, the thing.
What flavor were your fingers?
Oh, God. Yeah, I never liked
it. Oh, you know, you're talking about other people listening to podcasts, and your dentist may hear this podcast. Record a video of themselves.
I play it for them.
When
I go to my dentist, I tell them, put on my podcast there. And I'm laughing away.
I'm the guy who laughs.
That's me there. That's me. Wait for this bit.
I'm a middle-aged man. I don't know what's going on with the technology.
I'm the one with the bad memory here. I have to tell you this every time we record.
It's flashing 12 o'clock. It's just fucking 4 in the afternoon. It's 12 o'clock on the corner.
But you know what? Tarantino has a ton of them. A ton of them.
Of course. One of the classic ones, of course, is, you know, the very, very famous one from Reservoir Dogs, of course.
Okay, good. I thought you were going to mention my scene there. But that's a torture scene again. So look, the torture ones that I have, if I asked around, people would just throw them out at me. They'd be like Casino Royale, where he's getting his nuts smacked with that rope.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to kink shame anyone, but that does look painful. Marathon Man, as you said, stuck in the middle with you, that scene from Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, I think that those are a separate thing entirely. Torture
Fair
scenes.
Enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Dark Knight came up with a few people, but I don't really feel like that didn't stand out to me as a great sort of interrogation scene. It was just the imagery was cool. Like Batman was behind the Joker. And
that's kind of it, that it's the moment where these two characters are in this one environment. And I think it's maybe more of an accumulation of what's happened in the story up to that point, which is you have an amazing depiction of the Joker. And finally, you have them, you know, face to face. Yeah, listen, I think it's good. I think because I love that.
Can I tell you, though, I'll be honest with you, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but when I saw that film in the cinema and he said to him, "You're looking for Rachel." And he's like, "Yeah, where is she?" And he's like, "She's up there at that warehouse." And he's like, "You fuck her, I'll get her." And he runs off and he tells you, "Man, go to the other place because that's where Aaron Eckhart is." And he's like, "Grand job." And then when they get there, they're in the wrong spot each. And I remember in the cinema thinking, have I missed a bit? They've gone wrong. What's going on? And then, of course, I didn't realise that the Joker lied to Batman.
He lied, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. Hilarious.
It's his thing throughout the whole thing is that he's lying. He's just completely... He's a little fibber, the Joker. He's a little fibber. You can't trust the thing he says. He says he's going to the shops. He's not.
It's a good film. I enjoyed it.
I actually really love it. I actually really love that film.
Do you know which is another one that subverted expectations for me? And I don't know if you'll remember it, but it was in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And when Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt are interrogating the guy in the hotel room.
Option A. If I could shut up. Option A. You talk, we listen, no pain. Option B. You don't talk. I remove your thumbs with my pliers. Option C. I like to vary the details a bit, but the punchline is you die.
They switch up gender roles. And so she, you think, is going to go in there and be all like, she's going to be the sexy cop. And she's going to flirt with him and be really like slinky and like, why don't you tell me what you know and all that kind of stuff. And instead she goes in and just batters the shit out of him.
Can I get a soda or a juice or some sort of... option A.
That hurt.
It's like, that was very, very funny at the time. And I remember thinking, oh, fair play, you got me.
Kind of, a film just popped into my head where I went, do you know what? I actually should bring it up because this film, we probably don't talk about that much. But if we go to the kind of classic, you know, cop, you know, criminal version of this scene, usually it's like the criminal has been cornered and they're in, as you described, in a kind of an interrogation room and they're getting grilled by the cops, right? Like, you know, but the one that came to my mind that kind of subverts that and is exciting from an audience point of view is from Seven, when the cops are desperately on the hunt. Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt are like in the safety of the police precinct and they're kind of like so busy. They're just chatting to each other and they're kind of like chasing the clues. And a normal film would kind of follow them as they track down the leads and, you know, corner their killer and all that sort of stuff. And they're just kind of going up the stairs when all of a sudden someone behind them is going, "Detective, detective." And Kevin Spacey's character just lets out a roar, "Detective!" And it's so chilling. The killer's just walked right into him.
But it doesn't have to be like cops and robbers. It doesn't have to be like criminals and what have you. You can have like interviews as well. Frost Nixon is a great one.
Of course, yeah.
Let's get
Hold on, Ehrlichman were the ones really responsible. When you subsequently found out about it, why didn't you call the police and have them arrested? Isn't that just a cover-up of another kind of...
Well, maybe I should have done that. Maybe I should have just called the feds into my office and said, "Hey, there's the two men. Haul them down to the dock, fingerprint them, and then throw them in the can." I'm not made that way. These men, Haldeman, Ehrlichman, I knew their families. I knew them since they were just kids. Oh, yeah, but you know, politically, the pressure on me to let them go, that became overwhelming. So I did it. I cut off one arm, then I cut off the other, and I'm not a good butcher. And I have always maintained what they were doing, what we were all doing, was not criminal. Look, when you're in office, you gotta do a lot of things sometimes that are not always, in the strictest sense of the law, legal. But you do them because they're in the greater interests of the nation.
Right, wait, just so I understand correctly. Are you really saying that in certain situations, the president can decide whether it's in the best interests of the nation and then do something illegal?
I'm saying that when the president does it, that means it's not illegal.
I'm sorry?
That's what I believe.
Just pulling that information out of Nixon.
It's like a duel where you're just like trying to pin, like a wrestling match almost, like a verbal, trying to pin your opponent down, get the thing you want out of them. Can I give you one from a documentary, Navalny, which is a documentary about the Russian opposition leader who was recently assassinated. And it's an absolutely brilliant documentary. You should watch it if you have not seen it, particularly now it's even more poignant. But in it, he is poisoned, so they're with him as he is poisoned, as he goes through his recovery. And then when he pairs up with Turkish journalists as they try and track down his assassins, they manage to trick their way into getting on the phone with his actual poisoner, pretending to be, and whatever they were, they're not KGB now, but pretending to be
FSB.
He manages over the phone to trick this guy into revealing all the details of how they went about trying to poison him. And it is a brilliant, we're talking about a verbal and mental wrestling match.
Konstantin. Hello. Hello, Konstantin Borisovich.
A battle of wits, and how he pins his opponent down and gets what he wants out of them. And you can feel the victory of them getting that information. It's really thrilling stuff, so I'm recommending Navalny.
A few others that I can mention that I think are good. Goonies, when the Fratellis are interrogating Chunk.
Of course.
We start with the pudgy little fingers, then the plump little hand, then the fleshy arm. Now tell me, where are your other little...
Oh, and he spills everything, and he starts doing... They want to put his hand in the blender and he starts confessing to everything. In the third grade, I did this. And then the one he's talking about, I made the sound of like puking and he actually made someone else puke. It's great
and
performance,
like,
but
yeah, I'm starting to like this kid.
But the worst thing I ever done, I mixed the bottle's fake puke at home and then I went to this movie theater, hid the puke in my jacket, climbed up to the balcony and then... Then I made a noise like this. And then I dumped it over the side on all the people in the audience. Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other. I never felt so bad in my entire life.
I'm beginning to like this kid, Mom.
Hit puree!
No! I'm too young!
Such a charming film. Pulp Fiction. Say what again?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And they're like, who's on first? What? Say what again?
I don't know if it's
really remember it accurately, but, you know, it's something like that.
Of course, there's another one from that same era. I don't know if it's on your list, but, of course, L.A. Confidential is a big...
Yeah, and L.A. Confidential is a classic one of the good cop, bad cop. The good cop goes in and he's like negotiating. He's like, you know, tell me what you know and I can make this easy for you. And then Russell Crowe goes in and is like, all right, can't tell me what you know or I'll break this chair over your face.
Do you want to know what makes that scene stand out to me? And I don't think if this moment wasn't in it, I don't think I would remember it as much. Before Guy Ritchie's playing good cop, he's interrogating the potential criminal, and all the other detectives are outside witnessing it. Russell Crowe has got his hands on the back of a chair, an office chair, and he's just getting crosser and crosser and angrier until his blood boils over and he snaps the back of the chair. It's him snapping the back of the chair.
It's pure melodrama.
But that snapping the chair is fucking... That meant, oh shit, anything can happen. Anything can happen. He means it.
This came to me when I was thinking about Good Cop, Bad Cops, because that's one of the scenes in the wheel as well, but we've never come to that yet, but there's a very funny moment in The Heat. Not Heat. You know, Heat's got a great one with she's got a great Sandra ass. Bullock.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy, where they're interrogating the guy in the interrogation room, and Melissa McCarthy just bursts in and fires a phone book across the room into the face of the guy. And it's like, he's like, oh yeah, which one are you, good cop, bad cop? And she just kicks open the door and fucks the phone book straight into his face. And I just guffawed at that.
That is brilliant.
How long is this going
to
take?
I don't know. Maybe 12 hours, hopefully less. I have to find out what drives him. We could just go in there and beat him with a phone book. No, no, no. If you enter that room, you could break the bond that we have created, okay? Just please, please trust me on this one. Hello. Coffee? I drink a little more coffee than I probably should. Where's Larkin? Couldn't wait 10 seconds. 10 seconds.
I hope we don't have the same pick. I wonder if we do have the same pick.
You don't, because yours has a kid.
Okay. Mine has a kid in it, yeah. I went for a pick that was a slightly unconventional and terrible interrogation scene, as in a terrible interrogation process. And it's the interrogation scene in The Big Lebowski, where John Goodman's character and the dude go and try and interrogate a kid because they find his homework.
This is where good cop, bad cop, they're not in sync at all.
It's terrible.
They're both shit cop and worse cop.
And they're just leaning on the tropes that they know from TV and films. And they both don't know whether they're supposed to be good. John Goodman's playing good cop initially. And the dude is playing bad.
And they're talking to each other in the middle of it. It's like, ask him about this. No, ask him about that. Like,
they don't know what they want.
No. What happened to the car? Like, ask him. Shut up. I know what I'm doing. And the kid is just stonewalling them. Just completely stonewalling them.
It's like they're wrestling. You were talking about wrestling, right? Wrestling with your opponent. They're just wrestling with each other, and the kid is just standing back as they just completely fumble over each other. And John Goodman, who was playing good cop, escalates it. He says, "Right, you want?" He goes, "He knows you're supposed to go to the violent stage." So he goes, "Oh yeah, you want to play it like that? What is that? Your car out front?" He's a kid, and it's just. It's this muscle car. And he goes up.
Because he can't beat up the kid. He can't beat up the kid. So he's got to break something that's valuable, he thinks, to the kids.
His head smashes up the car. And the neighbor comes up, "What are you doing to my car?" It is fucking priceless.
It's such a fucking great film.
Is this your homework, Larry?
Look, man.
Please. Is this your homework, Larry?
Just ask him about the car, man.
Is this yours, Larry? Is this your homework, Larry?
Is that your car out front?
Is this your homework, Larry?
We know it's his fucking homework. Where's the fucking money, you little brat?
Look, Larry, have you ever heard of Vietnam?
No, for Christ.
You're entering a world of pain, son. We know that this is your homework. We know that you stole a car.
And the fucking money.
And the fucking money. And we know that this is your homework.
We're gonna cut your dick off, Larry.
You're killing your father, Larry. All right, this is pointless. Okay, it's time for plan B. You might want to watch out that front window, Larry. Son, this is what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass!
Why it's good is because they're aware of all of the tropes that these scenes use in classic TV. But also their characters are aware of all the tropes because their characters grew up with all that stuff of what's done in the movies. And so the fun is just how much of the divide between fiction and actually trying to execute that shit in real life. It's just so joyful and hilarious. And I've said it before, but I love the Coen brothers. And that's a brilliant, brilliant scene. It's so funny. It's brilliant.
You've reminded me, though, that there's a very funny one as well, which rips into the tropes of good cop, bad cop, and it's in The Other Guys with Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell. When they go to interview Steve Coogan.
We're going to do good cop, bad cop. Okay? It's the oldest game in the book for a reason. It works. I come strong, then you come in. Right?
Yeah.
I come strong, then you come in.
Right. Got it.
Now you listen to me, you piece of shit. It's just you and me, and I'm going to rip you apart. How did you cover your losses up? Huh? What drug cartel are you working with now?
Okay, well, I'll talk to you. You're reasonable.
No, no. Look at me.
Yeah.
You want to talk to me? Yeah, what are you doing? Alan, I'm going to make you eat
stop playing a human shit! Get away from me! Help me!
Very, very funny. Well, my pick, and when I was like putting down a list of my favorite ones, Tarantino kept coming up again and again and again. Like we've mentioned a couple of them there with True Romance and with Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, but he has two all-timers in the same film, and I was debating about which one to go with. And I've kind of gone for the really obvious one, the basic one. That it's the opening scene in Inglourious Basterds.
You're sheltering enemies of the state, are you not?
Yes.
You're sheltering them underneath your floorboards, aren't you?
Yes.
Point out to me the areas where they're hiding.
It's the introduction to Colonel Landa when he turns up at the little French cottage and he begins coiling around this guy like a snake.
Yeah.
He's been toying with him the entire time and he knows that he has a family underneath the floorboards hiding. Spellbinding scene. Like,
yeah.
To begin a film and just lock in on a character you've never met before, and he's such a twee, sort of like impish little sprite of he flies against convention for what you'd want of a Nazi officer. He's like gleefully like a little leprechaun, and he's so twisted and evil, and this big brutish like hulk of a Frenchman who could fucking knock him out if they were in a fight. You just kill him with one punch, and he's completely like shitting bricks sitting opposite this guy as he basically gets him to negotiate away his soul. He just gets him to just give me everything that you possess. I'm going to rob you of everything.
Since I haven't heard any disturbance, I assume while they're listening, they don't speak English.
Yes.
Now to switch back to French now, and I want you to follow my masquerade set clear.
Yes.
Monsieur Lapadite. Je vous remercie pour le nez et pour votre hospitalité. Il me semble que nous en avons terminé. Ah, mesdames, je vous remercie pour le temps que vous m'avez consacré. Nous n'ennuierons pas votre famille plus longtemps. Donc, monsieur, mesdemoiselles, je prends congé de vous et je vous dis adieu.
And it's such a fantastic scene in that film. If the film just went to shit after that, it would still be an amazing sort of entry into Tarantino's canon because of that scene. So yeah, I've gone with the opening scene of Inglourious Basterds.
To prove what you said earlier on is absolutely true with regard to interrogation scenes being big screenwriter scenes. I remember reading that script for Inglourious Basterds and reading that opening scene, which was something like on the page, 16 pages or something like that on the page. But I remember being
full of typos, grammatically fucked.
Yeah.
Like it's breaking format conventions. It's doing all the things you're not supposed to do.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
because I was turning those pages and the scene was alive in my head because it was on the bloody page. And what I saw in the finished film was the scene that I read that was in my head. And these are the types of scenes that us as screenwriters, we fucking relish them and we want to find ways of doing our own riff on them.
Amazing. I printed off that script and gave it to my dad because he loves World War II, obviously, and he read that script and he loved it. He's never read one of my scripts, but he read that script and loved it. And I was glad that I could do that for him. I was glad that I could provide him with a script that he wanted to read. But yeah, that's just how good Tarantino is as a writer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Au revoir, Shoshana!
Will, we did it. We managed to get through it. We have been pushing off this episode for ages because we've been playing tag with sickness and illness and shite.
Yeah.
And we've just managed to squeeze it in under the wire. So another episode done. And we already know what the next episode's going to be because it was also picked by our patrons. Do you remember what it was?
I don't. Tell me for the first time. What is it?
You do know what it is. I bet you do.
Oh, I actually do know. Is this best ambiguous ending?
It is.
Yes.
There you go.
That's a win.
Listen,
yeah.
If you want to pick an episode for us, you can write in, go to our website, bestbitspodcast.com/contact, and drop us a line with your suggestion for a scene theme.
And also, I want to add, please consider becoming a patron member. It goes a long way to helping us continue to make these episodes. Without our patrons, we wouldn't be able to do the podcast. So it's 100% Patreon supported. And if you do, then please come over and join our Discord.
It's €3 a month. I just realized there earlier on this evening that what we say is like, it's for the price of a pint.
It's not.
You're never going to get a pint for €3.
No, it's half a pint. Or it's a coffee, if a coffee. Probably less than the price of coffee.
Not even a coffee. Yeah. Coffee is like $3.50 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can do that. But you can also be a free member. If you just go to our Patreon, the link is in the show notes. You can become a free member and just, you know, keep up to speed with what we're up to. Because we put out at least 1 to 2 episodes on the Patreon a month. Mm-hmm. Or you can just become a subscriber on Apple or on Red Circle. Yeah, it all just goes to helping us pay for everything that goes into putting out a podcast.
Kevin.
We got it done.
Great. Another
thank you,
another good episode in the bag. I love getting on doing these episodes. I love having another podcast, another episode of this podcast out there in the world. It lifts my heart. It raises my spirits. It reinvigorates my passion for cinema, the medium that I love. And I declare my adoration for on a bi-monthly basis. I don't know where that thought's going.
Ditto. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Within Cells Interlinked.
Within Cells Interlinked.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a Patreon member where you'll receive bonus shows where we talk about recent releases and what we're up to.
And you'll receive access to our Discord chat room where we hang out with our listeners.
Search the Best Bits podcast on Patreon or click on the link in the show notes.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Mini Bits.
Another new episode.
Tuck a deal, stupid cunts.
Patreon podcast.
Of this Patreon podcast. Exclusive.
Exclusive.
The Best Bits podcast with Will and Ken. Bonus content for you. This is for you, not for them, just for you. The Best Bits podcast with Will and Kevin. Exclusive content. You rock. We're talking films and shows. The Best Bits podcast. This is for you.
Kevin, how are you?
Hi, honey. How are you?
Oh, you know, I've got this. I've got my corns sorted out. I went to the chiropodist the other day, and she
your
said,
"Corn,
my corns. Did you ever get corns?
No.
Did you know what a corn is?
Yeah, it's a bunion on your foot, isn't it?
Yeah, like in between your toes and stuff like that.
Do you not wear any shoes like around the house? You walk
no,
barefoot.
No, it's the opposite.
GA shorts.
It's the opposite. I wear incredibly tight shoes, like those Chinese women.
Oh,
who get their feet bound, who had their feet bound, like, you know, before the turn of this last century. And so they had incredible corns and bunions. This is a great opener for a Mini Bits episode where we get people disgusted.
Squally, it's episode 73 of the Mini Bits. I'm Kevin, you're Will. This is our Patreon podcast. Thank you to all our lovely patrons. Yeah. A few of you have jumped in recently. I don't know what we said. We try to goad people into joining up every single episode, and then every so often it's like a lot of people join because of one specific episode, and I'm like, how did we say on that episode is different to the other 270 episodes.
Maybe it didn't sound as desperate. Maybe we said, don't join. Maybe reverse psychology. That's how we should do it. Reverse psychology. Don't join up to our patron. Don't.
It's cancel. You don't everybody cancel.
You don't deserve to be in this group. We don't want you. We don't like the look of you.
We don't need anybody.
It's just us. It's absolutely just us. Hey, should we tell people? We did, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't say it on mic, especially so early. We did an interview with the Irish Examiner last Friday.
We did.
Yeah.
And
how do you think I did?
I think you did all right. Like, you didn't interrupt me once, so I was delighted with how I came across. But, you know, there's no sort of time limit on this. We don't know when it's going to get posted. One of our friends was saying, Kathy at the cinema was saying that their interview with, did they do the Examiner as well? It was six months before it posted.
And the Guardian, I'm pretty sure. They were profiled in the Guardian as well.
Yeah, but we don't do any really promotion. Like, we don't do anything.
Well, this is our first time getting any sort of like proper coverage, which is going to be mad. So listen to all you listeners who have found us before we explode. You're an OG.
Bust.
You're an OG listener before Kevin starts getting gold chains from all his Patreon dash.
I think I'm more of a silver than a gold. I think my undertones suit more silver. But,
I just want to
die. Goes with Prince Albert.
Your hat?
Yeah.
I want one of those diamond studs in my tooth. That's all I want. So I can go bing whenever I'm on a call.
Oh, yeah.
Bing.
I usually just, you know, wink and like glint.
Yeah.
Like a starlight twinkle.
Speaking of which, I interrupted you. What did you want to speak of? Which?
Start the timer.
Oh! I forgot.
You may as well.
Start the timer.
All these lucky loos are listening in and they're wondering, what are we going to be talking about? But we have to start talking about them after.
Yeah.
We say goodbye. But look, I wanted to talk to you about, you've seen a few things. You've seen the new Godzilla film.
Yes.
I've seen the first Omen. I saw Scoop as well.
We're looking Netflix forward to watching thing. That. We already see. Okay.
Okay. I'll save my thoughts. And what else did I see? I made notes, but sure, it doesn't really matter.
I think I saw it.
And I was going to go through all the summer releases and see what takes your fancy.
Okay. I'm looking forward because I don't actually know what's on the horizon. So
The Joker 2 trailer came out today.
I saw it. Yes, I watched that.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of Chicago.
Yeah, it's kind of like you see it's all very much in the mind's eye. They're calling it a jukebox musical. Am I right in saying that?
I think you're right in saying that.
So, look, hey, listen, what it did remind me of was that I want to rewatch The Joker because I saw it in the cinema and I thought it was fine. It was kind of a bold new direction.
I'm just going to go back and watch the episodes from the Batman 66 show, the Joker episodes.
Oh, yeah, that's going
to
be...
Just to fill me in, like, on the lore. You know, get up to speed.
Get you right up to speed. And you'll be there going, where are all the guys in the purple suits with the masks? When are they going to show up? And like,
it's a bit of a weird time, though, where we have the Penguin TV show with Colin Farrell coming out, which is a totally different canon version of the Penguin. Then you have this offshoot of Joker, which is its own universe entirely.
Mm.
And then you have the old Batman films that you can watch.
Right.
And, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's just, I don't know. I'm kind There's of so many IP.
But like,
it's just everywhere.
What's happened is the comic book world has very much entered the film world. It's where you could have different runs, totally different runs of a character by different authors. And there'd be totally different riffs on it and stuff. This is the thing. Kevin, so I'm only catching up on this. You mentioned it to me on a podcast. Was it on one of those?
It was the last show. It was the last mini bits.
You said everyone's describing stuff as insane recently.
And have you started noticing it though?
Only with people trying to rise you. That's the only place where I've noticed people on Discord are trying to rise you.
Oh my god! Oh my god! I could start posting now, like tweets, comments, TikToks. Articles, anything. Insane is everywhere. This is insane. That's insane. It's insane. There was a festival just going on about this insane lineup. I was like, oh, it's a mentally ill lineup. Okay. It's just, it's everywhere. And the other thing, do you know the other thing that's also bothering me lately?
What?
And this has been bothering me for years and years and years. It used to be that everyone used to misspell definitely. They'd go defiantly.
Okay.
Oh, it's defiantly whatever. It would just, they're morons. But no, I just keep noticing everyone keeps spelling a lot as one word. A-L-O-T. A lot. Where have they gotten into their heads that a lot is one word? It's the same way that people will write every time as one word.
What's the one that you've pulled me up on a few times and I can't get it right? Compliment.
Compliment.
I can't, but I can't get it right. It's like the
but you
I.
You can, because I told you the other day.
Yeah, and I went searching for it and I couldn't find it because I had to actually had to use it.
If there's an I in compliment, it's yeah. I'm paying you a compliment.
That's a good way to remember it. Okay, good. And then compliment.
I wrote that to you.
But you did, and I went to try and find it because I found myself writing the word compliments. And I went, shit, Kevin.
But you gave me a thumbs up, which meant in my world that, yeah, I read that. Thanks.
But I did, right? I'm talking about a couple of days later when I was faced with the exact same hurdle of writing the word compliment. I went, okay, what did Kevin say again about compliment? There's an I and the E. What did he say? So I went searching for it and I found it, I think. And I went, the I is paying me a compliment or I'm giving you
a compliment. It's insane how little you can retain information. It's insane.
Come here, let's start talking about what we watched. Come on.
Did you start the timer?
Yeah, it's gone. It's ticking. It's ticking down. The world's going to explode.
Do you know I have to put in the sound effect? I have to line up all my sound effects.
When you said start the timer,
I have a whole soundboard. Okay. Jesus Christ, where's my fucking
what?
Where's my ding dang ding?
Here we go. The timer has started. There we go.
There we go. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Right.